This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And we're answering your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. What's next, Layla?
We have an email from John. Dear Dr. Hoffman, Layla, my friend is 33 years old. 4 years ago, he started taking omeprazole for acid reflux. Well, during that time, he developed a polyp, which then grew from 2 millimeter to 7 millimeter. MM is millimeter, right?
No, yeah, in the gallbladder.
In the gallbladder. So now the doctor is pushing him to have his gallbladder removed. I'm worried about the negative effects of removing his gallbladder.
Right. So here's the deal on that.
I
thought that the criterion for removing the gallbladder in the presence of a polyp was when the polyp gets to be 0.9 millimeters. Mm-hmm. But I may be wrong. I mean, that's my recollection. So 0.7 is a little smaller. Gallbladder polyps are common. They're polyps. Mm-hmm. They're little outgrowths within the gallbladder. But the problem is that the larger they are, the more likely they are to harbor cancer. Mm. And you want to catch gallbladder cancer really early, because gallbladder cancer, if not caught early, is very, very dangerous and almost uniformly fatal. So there's a very low threshold now for removing your gallbladder, because they think it's a superfluous organ anyway. Easy surgery, and they will take it out, confirm that the polyp is benign, which very likely it is, and, you know, you live happily ever after, hopefully. But is there something you can do to prevent the polyp from enlarging? Hmm. And the answer in my mind is no. Mm-hmm. I really wish I could tell you to take this and that and the other supplement, you know, and people are looking for a protocol, like a gallbladder polyp protocol. Mm-hmm. In all honesty, I can't offer one.
Yeah.
So I would get a second opinion to see if it's really necessary or if it could be observed. Mm-hmm. But tendency of polyps is to somewhat enlarge, and eventually it's probably going to pass the threshold of suspicion and may require that the gallbladder be removed. Now, why not just remove the polyp? Why not go in it? Well, first of all, it's kind
like colon polyps, for example.
Exactly. It's kind of hard to get into the gallbladder and, you know, just isolate the polyp and snip it off and then biopsy it. Mm-hmm. And secondly, how do you know that there isn't some residual cancer in the wall of the gallbladder? The gallbladder is a very small organ. It's about the size of your thumb. Mm-hmm. So you take out the whole gallbladder.
Oh, yeah. That's quite small. Okay. So John is concerned that his friend, you know, that without a gallbladder, he might have to go on a low-fat diet
of that. I researched that very intensively, and that's something you'll find on many holistic sites, is don't have your gallbladder taken out because you need your gallbladder. If God had intended us to not have gallbladders, he wouldn't have given us a gallbladder. Don't mess with Mother Nature.
Right.
Because you will be impaired in your fat digestion. Huh. And the answer is, according to most studies, and frankly, they may be whitewashing this because they have a stake in, you know, perpetuating gallbladder surgery. But I got to say that I didn't see a lot to demonstrate that people have lifelong problems with fat.
Yes. It's only in the beginning, as the body readjusts, that you may have to, you would benefit from a lower fat diet to avoid diarrhea.
Right. The gallbladder doesn't make bile. It just stores
it. It's a depot.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So your liver is now kind of, I want to say, free-flowing bile to some extent.
Right.
But your body will try to readjust, and eventually you'll add more healthy fats back into your diet, and you should be okay.
The proof of the pudding is that if you really had fat intolerance after a gallbladder removal, and some people do. They have post-cholecystectomy syndrome. We've seen them.
Yeah,
they just don't do well.
Yeah.
And it could be SIBO. It could be something else.
Mm-hmm.
If it really was that essential and you couldn't digest fat at all, people would be deterred from eating fat.
Yeah.
And they would lose a lot of weight after gallbladder surgery.
Mm.
The opposite happens, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
People gain a lot of weight because now they can eat with impunity. They don't get a gallbladder attack. They eat like a house on fire. And they say, this is great. I can eat so much better now. I can eat all this fat I want. And it doesn't trigger gallbladder contractions, which contract around the stone, which cause painful spasms.
Yes, and that's a reason for a low-fat diet, which is a very low-fat diet could be something that causes a gallstone, different from a polyp. The question was about a polyp. So, yeah, the gallstone can also be caused by crystallization, meaning the gallbladder has not had much opportunity to contract.
Which it
meaning
on
you're
a
on a low fat on a very low fat diet or a non-fat
traditionally,
diet.
Traditionally, people who are on crash weight loss programs, where they're on a very very low fat diets, they get gallbladder stones. And actually, studies have shown that if you add a little fat when you're on a diet, it's better for the gallbladder. It protects the gallbladder.
Yep, absolutely.
Because it works the gallbladder.
Yeah.
It makes the it continue. It allows the bile to flow.
Right.
And the bile just sits there, and it condenses there, and it solidifies.
Yeah.
Into a stone.
Fat is an essential macronutrient. Everybody, a low fat diet is not your friend, or no fat diet is terrible, health wise. So.
Are they going to revoke your nutrition credentials by saying that? You say fat is essential.
Fat is essential.
Okay.
Fat is essential.
Okay.
John, thank you very much, and best of luck to your friend.
Because the American Dietetic Association may be sending a telegram to you.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Okay. Good point at which to pause, because we allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you. So here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT-Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT-Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT-Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT-Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT-Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening, thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions with Layla. What's next?
We have an email from Usha. Dear Dr. Hoffman, my daughter, now 26, suffers from anxiety and depression and has been under the care of a psychotherapist for 2 years. The doctors helped her by helping her get back on track with going back to college, but she still has anxiety and depression. She does not speak to me, and here's a big clue, Dr. Hoffman. She does not speak to me as she feels her problems are because of me. Okay.
That just
told a whole lot.
That's a very 20-something attitude.
That's true. It's all the mother's fault.
Yeah.
Over the past 4 years, I've tried to help her by purchasing vitamins, organic foods. I've come across an article on the internet about you and your work on helping people with anxiety. What would you do? Is there anything I can do to help my daughter?
Well, first of all, it's a consult. And secondly, don't keep trying to help your daughter, because she's obviously working out issues of autonomy, and she hates you now, and your efforts to to help her are going to be misconstrued.
Yes.
You know, as an effort to control her and, you know, and interfere with her individuation as an adult.
Mm.
So, you know, it's not going to help. So, you know, you should see... I mean, if she's willing, I mean, even if the suggestion comes from you, it may be tainted by the fact that she doesn't feel well disposed towards you.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a nutritionally oriented practitioner who can help her with that, she has to independently decide that that's in her interest. There's not that much you can do, Mom, I will say, at this point.
Yeah.
The prognosis doesn't look good for you to help her. First of all, what bespeaks poor prognosis here is that the mom is writing on behalf of the daughter. The daughter's not interested. If this were a patient applying, yes. if the mother was saying, I have a 26-year-old daughter, I want to bring her in here, I would say to the receptionist, say, have the daughter make the appointment.
Yes.
Because if mom's making an appointment for an adult, mm-hmm. already this is not, doesn't bode well for a therapeutic intervention.
Yeah.
And,
great
you know,
points.
So we can get into what's going to help her, you know, yes, diet makes a difference, and yes.
Stay away from additives, preservatives, food allergies that may be triggering any of this, but again, this is a consult.
You know, curcumin has an anti-inflammatory effect on the brain, fish oil has a beneficial effect.
Magnesium,
theanine,
B vitamins,
you know,
all
these,
of that.
Right.
Yeah, so it could be that. It could be deficiencies, she would need a workup. For all of that.
Well, this is called orthomolecular medicine. It was actually developed in the early 1950s and 60s mm-hmm. as a way to target some of the neurotransmitter pathways mm-hmm. that may be affected by nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Usha, best of luck to your daughter. We hope she feels better soon. Okay. We have an email from Christine. First, Dr. Hoffman, thank you and Layla for all that you do to inform us about health. Thank you, Christine, for that note. My question is, suggested lifestyle to prevent an abdominal aortic aneurysm? What diet do you recommend? What is good and what specifically to avoid?
It's a little bit like saying, what care and maintenance would you recommend for a sock that is stretched out of shape?
Ah, new sock. Clip that aneurysm if you have one.
Right. Darn the sock.
Darn the sock.
I mean, that's
right,
what people
right.
used to do. Now people, their socks are throwable. But what you used to do is you'd have like a ballooned out part of your sock and you'd like cut it off with a scissor and then you'd sew it up. Mm-hmm. And you'd get more life out of your sock.
Yeah. You might get a callus on your foot from the...
From
the nub of the... Exactly.
Of the sewing. It doesn't feel good.
I hated darn socks as a kid.
Yeah. I know, but
I hated
you're old enough to remember that people used to actually mend clothing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My mother mended our clothing and did all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's very psychological because I continued as an adult to mend my socks.
Yeah.
And still, like, unconsciously at this point, hating how they feel on my feet until I said, hey, I'm buying new socks.
Well, coming back to aortic aneurysms.
Yes.
Yeah. So I cannot say that there is going to be a nutrient that's going to help that. I mean, it is possible that people who have aortic aneurysms have some sort of collagen defect, and so maybe collagen precursors could be helpful for that.
Okay.
Proline and, the various precursors to collagen, mm-hmm. or even, you know, taking hyaluronic acid or something like that might be helpful. Controlling blood pressure is of utmost importance, mm-hmm. and there's nutritional approaches for that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I got to say that... aortic aneurysms need to be observed. There is surgical treatment for aortic aneurysms. Mm-hmm. It's not an inconsequential surgery.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I wish I could tell you that there is a protocol mm-hmm. that prevents them from swelling or developing. But it's really it becomes sort of a hydrostatic problem. You mm-hmm. know, like the bigger it is, the thinner it is, the more likely it is to enlarge faster. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you reach a point where the wall thinning becomes potentially dangerous, and that's the point where there's a standard size of an aneurysm that dictates mm-hmm. surgical intervention.
Yeah.
And that's been worked out statistically, and, mm-hmm. They don't do it at the slightest instigation, but they do it at a certain point where the aneurysm gets big enough that it is actually likely to be consequential.
Yeah. So it needs to be watched.
Yeah.
That's the most important.
It is terrific that they discovered it, because although it creates some apprehension for you, it could save you a big, big problem later.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to discover them, you know, because routinely we don't look for aortic aneurysms.
Yeah, that's a sonogram, right?
Usually people find them accidentally. It's like, oh, let's look at your liver. Oh, by the way, you have an aortic aneurysm. It's like, I'm listening to your heart, but I hear a thump below where the heart should be. It's like a whoosh sound. Oh, that's an aortic aneurysm. It's
okay.
On physical exam, it can be picked up, but it's hard. By the time it's picked up, it could be dangerous. I wish I could tell you.
Okay. Christine, thank you for this very thoughtful question. All right. Let's see here. We've got an email from Steve. It's a question about probiotics. Why is it recommended to take probiotics on a daily basis, given that they are bacteria? Why don't they form viable colonies and attach to the gut epithelium after a single dose?
And that's a really good question.
Yeah.
So what they've discovered, and this is according to a recent study, and the study was billed as probiotics don't work, is they discovered that a lot of people who take probiotics, they can't culture the probiotics from their stool. Okay?
Okay,
so,
yeah.
And they even went further than that. They didn't even just look at stool. They actually looked at further up with the colonoscopy. They retrieved bacterial material from higher up in the intestinal tract, and they found no colonization per this idea that the... So their conclusion was the probiotics don't do anything. They're a waste of time. Actually, that wasn't their conclusion. They actually said this. They said, we cannot say that these probiotics aren't doing anything. We just didn't find them.
Huh.
And so probiotics may act in different ways. They may act by interacting with other bacteria, suppressing the growth of certain bacteria. We know that bacteria compete, and they actually secrete substances that are natural inhibitors. So they may suppress the growth of other bacteria or encourage the growth of other helpful bacteria. Mm-hmm. They may influence the gastrointestinal tract without implanting.
Yeah.
However, in some people, they do implant. It's just that not in everybody do they implant, and that doesn't mean they're a waste of time.
Right.
But, you know, theoretically, it would be just like in a laboratory, you just, you know, in a petri dish, you just put the bacteria down and everything grows perfectly. Well, that's not the way it works in the gut.
Our gut is not a petri dish. It's not a specific,
And that is a newer concept of how we look at probiotics, is that they don't necessarily implant. They maybe have benefits beyond implantation.
Right, right. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't implant in anyone.
Right,
it could
indeed
implant.
Right.
But again, you wouldn't see that necessarily on a stool test.
Right, and
or
stool
would be recognized
tests
there.
Don't even pick that up. And this test, this study was a little more rigorous. We could have criticized and said, well, they're looking at stool. But they anticipated that, and they went further up to see if higher up in the colon the bacteria did survive. And they couldn't find any.
I could think of several reasons to take probiotics on a daily basis, as Steve is asking about why is it recommended. For immunity, your gut-associated lymphoid tissue.
They may send signals to the immune system just by their presence.
Yes.
And their presence
may be... The bacteria talk to each other.
Their presence may be limited without colonization. It just may be a pass-through.
Right, right, right.
Right.
So there's that immune response for anybody who needs a little help after taking a dose of a round of antibiotics. It's beneficial to take probiotics.
For mood.
It's great for mood.
Potentially.
Because kimchi could be the new Prozac,
as
was a subheading in a long ago Psychology Today article that
gut
I thought
brain
was...
Gut-brain connection,
all of that. There are certain probiotics that are helpful for women in combating UTIs and yeast infections and things of that nature. There are other probiotics... There's a long list of probiotics for different particular
functional
conditions.
Products. There's a newer one that is, we'll talk about that as it gets introduced, that actually lowers cholesterol, or is said to lower cholesterol. We'll look at that one, you know, and see if that really is borne out.
Yeah. And why do we want to lower cholesterol anymore after our conversation in part one?
That's true, but it shouldn't need to be lowered.
Yeah.
And then there's also the ones that make glutathione, you know, like the ones from...
Right. I know the one you're talking about. It's tip of my tongue syndrome right now. But Regactive.
Regactive, yeah.
Yes, Regactive is it.
Yep.
So that's helpful. Lots of good reasons to take probiotics if you're prone to things like eczema or even acne. I think it's beneficial.
Yep.
SIBO, once your SIBO has been treated.
Right.
Candida, once your
Candida has
been...
Repopulate your intestine.
Repopulate your gut with good, healthy stuff after a round of antibiotics, as I said earlier.
Some species work on ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, like Visbiome. Mm-hmm. We prefer that to BSL number 3 these days.
Right, Visbiome, right, which we talked about at length. So, Steve, it's okay to take those probiotics.
That's not a reason not to take them, in other
it's
words.
Exactly.
Hey, Layla, guess what? We're out of time. Plum out of time.
What?
Yeah, I know. Time flies when you're having fun, so here we are.
Okay.
That's it for this week's edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, our weekly Q&A with Layla. Keep those questions coming. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. Have yourselves a great week. Keep listening to our podcast throughout the week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And don't forget to support our sponsors and check out FullScript for a full range of really high-quality products that you can order through drhoffman.com. Just click on Shop. It'll drop-down menu will take you to FullScript, and you can order products there that I have specifically curated, as well as a full range of some of the best brands that are available at good prices. Thanks, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Thanks, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.